is Wednesday, November 9th, here in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. Just ahead, Democrat presidential nominee Hillary Clinton formally concedes the election to Donald Trump.
I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future.
We'll hear more from Clinton, as well as from President Obama's first comments on the election victory of his political nemesis. We'll also have analysis on Donald Trump's foreign policy ideas and the impact that Hillary Clinton had on women's political issues in America. It's all ahead on International Edition. Democrat Hillary Clinton conceded the U.S. presidential election to Republican Donald Trump on Wednesday. Speaking to supporters in New York, Clinton said she hopes Trump will be a successful president for all Americans, while also acknowledging the sadness that she and her supporters felt for just missing out on the chance to become America's first female president.
I know how disappointed you feel because I feel it too. And so do tens of millions of Americans who invested their hopes and dreams in this effort. This is painful, and it will be for a long time. But I want you to remember this. Our campaign was never about one person or even one election. It was about the country we love and about building an America that's hopeful, inclusive, and big-hearted. We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought. But I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it. It also enshrines other things, the rule of law, the principle that we are all equal in rights and dignity, freedom of worship and expression. We respect and cherish these values too, and we must defend them.
Well, shortly after, President Obama, who campaigned heavily for his fellow Democrat Clinton in the final weeks of the campaign, addressed reporters at the White House and gave his first public reaction to Trump's win.
I had a chance to talk to President-elect Trump last night, about 3:30 in the morning, I think it was, to congratulate him on winning the election. And I had a chance to invite him to come to the White House tomorrow to talk about making sure that there is a successful transition between our presidencies. Now, it is no secret that the president-elect and I have some pretty significant differences. But remember, 8 years ago, President Bush and I had some pretty significant differences. But President Bush's team could not have been more professional or more gracious in making sure we had a smooth transition so that we could hit the ground running. And one thing you realize quickly in this job is that the presidency and the vice presidency is bigger than any of us. So I have instructed my team to follow the example that President Bush's team set 8 years ago and work as hard as we can to make sure that this is a successful transition for the president-elect, because we are now all rooting for his success in uniting and leading the country. The peaceful transition of power is one of the hallmarks of our democracy, and over the next few months, we are going to show that to the world.
Well, Trump is due to be sworn into office on January 20th. In his victory speech before dawn on Wednesday morning at a New York hotel, Trump adopted a softer tone than much of his campaign rhetoric and focused on a theme of unity.
Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. We have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. It's time. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans. And this is so important to me. For those who have chosen not to support me in the past, of which there were a few people, I'm reaching out to you for your guidance and your help so that we can work together and unify our great country.
Later Wednesday, U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan, currently the most powerful Republican in government, gave a news conference in his home state of Wisconsin. Ryan and Trump engaged in several verbal feuds during the campaign, but the House Speaker still said he voted for his party's nominee and expressed hope Wednesday for a cooperative relationship going forward.
Last night, and again this morning, I spoke with President-elect Donald Trump, and I congratulated him on his great victory. We talked about the work ahead of us and the importance of bringing this country together. Let me just say, this is the most incredible political feat I have seen in my lifetime. This is something you've heard me say time and again. 7 out of 10 Americans, they do not like the direction our country is going. Many of our fellow citizens feel alienated and have lost faith in our core institutions. They don't feel heard. And they don't feel represented by those in office. But Donald Trump heard a voice out in this country that no one else heard. He connected in ways with people no one else did. He turned politics on its head. And now Donald Trump will lead a unified Republican government. And we will work hand in hand on a positive agenda to tackle this country's big challenges.
And one news update for you, anti-Trump protests have erupted in several U.S. cities on Wednesday evening, including in New York, Philadelphia, and Chicago. For a look at Twitter's reaction to the Trump victory and Hillary defeat, I spoke earlier with our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee.
Hi, Michael. So because it was such a close race, the reactions have been very dramatic on both sides. But let's check out what President-elect Donald Trump himself tweeted after it became quite clear that he won. He wrote, "Such a beautiful and important evening. The forgotten men and women will never be forgotten again. We will all come together as never before." That received about 500,000 likes within 10 hours. Trump supporters are obviously elated by the win, calling it the biggest upset in modern political history, which is correct.
Right. And in terms of Twitter, I did notice that he's now got 14 million followers. I think that
That's
went
a huge
up
jump.
By a million within the space of a few days.
Is that right? Okay.
So Clinton supporters, I'm sure, had more mixed reactions to her defeat. What has that reaction been like?
A lot of disappointment, understandably, and encouragement for hope. One of Hillary Clinton's most popular tweets from the last 24 hours is this. "To all the little girls watching, never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world." Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is one of the hottest Broadway actors right now who appears in Hamilton, shared this tweet. "This too shall pass, my mom. And she has never been wrong about it. More than 31,000 people liked it." People in the media industry who the Trump campaign criticized heavily for being biased against him also shared thoughts. Andrew Kaczynski, a political reporter who recently joined CNN from BuzzFeed, sent out this tweet. "As someone who spent 15 months researching Trump's past statements, if anyone says they know what a President Trump will do, they are lying."
Yeah, well, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what he actually does.
Right.
A lot of people are saying that. So in terms of mentions about the next presidential election, there is some buzz about that, even though it is 4 years away. What's going on?
Yeah, they're not wasting any time. A Facebook page that used to be called Political Revolutionary changed its name to Bernie 2020 as of Tuesday afternoon. That's, of course, showing support for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. But like you mentioned before we started recording, he will be in his late 70s by the time 2020 comes around.
So who knows if he has the energy at that point?
Maybe he will, maybe he won't.
Right.
On Twitter, many users are asking First Lady Michelle Obama to run for the next election. And this is the fun part. A sizable number of Democrats are actually calling for Mrs. Obama to run as president and Mr. Sanders as her vice president.
So Obama-Sanders 2020, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, G, for bringing us that overview of the social media reaction to the election. If you want to follow G on Twitter, she is at G Abby Lee. I'm also on Twitter at Michael_Lippin, and our show is at VOA_IE. Well, here's some of the top stories right now on voanews.com. Strong rally for U.S. stocks after Trump victory. Two U.S. fighter jets collide off San Diego coast, but pilots are safe. The International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran again exceeds limits on production of sensitive material. A Turkish judge for a U.N. war crimes panel is arrested in Turkey in connection with a recent coup attempt. And Haiti launches ambitious cholera vaccination campaign. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com. This is International Edition. Well, in his victory speech, Trump did touch a little bit on foreign policy, saying he wants to seek common ground with other nations, not hostility, and wants partnership, not conflict. Mike Gonzalez is a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a Washington-based conservative research institute. I spoke with him on the phone and asked him what a Trump foreign policy could look like.
Well, he's going to be a disruptor, right? He's campaigned as a disruptor. He wants to change things. So, our relationship with Europe and Asia and Latin America is bound to change. He says he's going to reverse what President Obama has done with Cuba. He wants to take a look at other trade deals. He's been very tough with China, for example. However, what your listeners need to understand is that America has very strong institutions. We have checks and balances with the Congress, and President Trump will surround himself with the cabinet, experts who understand foreign policy, and they will advise him in each area of the world what to do. And as any president, he's likely to listen to the experts he surrounds himself with.
What do you think of some of the foreign policy ideas that Trump has proposed?
Well, first of all, not every president follows the ideas that he or she promises a candidate. I think that he will probably, as I said, want to take a look at trade deals. He says that we have not made good trade deals. He wants to see foreign countries buy more American goods or not lose as many jobs overseas. He will be mindful as well not to lose foreign investment that comes into this country because that creates a lot of jobs. And I think that once that is explained to him how much foreign investment comes into places like North Carolina, he will be very mindful that he doesn't want to lose, because that creates a lot of jobs. Even Pennsylvania gets foreign investment. He will learn, as any president does. He will be advised by the people who he surrounds himself with at Treasury, at the State Department, at the Defense Department, and at the U.S. Trade Representative. And don't forget, events change the course of presidencies. George W. Bush came in 2001 thinking he was going to do certain things, and then 9/11 changed everything for George W. Bush. He became a wartime president, something he had not prepared to do.
Okay, well, thank you very much to Mike Gonzalez for speaking to VOA's International Edition.
Thank you.
A CNN exit poll from Election Day showed Donald Trump won the men's vote by 12 percentage points, but lost the women's vote to Hillary Clinton by the same 12-point margin. Kira Sanbanmatsu is a political scientist at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University in New Jersey. I asked her about the impact of Clinton's candidacy on how women's issues are discussed in American politics.
I think one of the most interesting aspects of the campaign is her emphasis on women as a voting bloc and issues important to women, the way she made Trump's treatment of women and objectification of women a campaign issue. We've seen the issue of sexual assault get a national hearing in a way we'd never seen before. So she has really campaigned in a way that was very different from past Democratic presidential nominees. Partly that is a function of Trump and what he brought to the table and the baggage that he had and the mistakes that he's made and the person that he is. But part of it was her as the first female presidential candidate to compete at this level and her strategic decisions to really court women and to emphasize those types of issues. So it's been a very different kind of campaign than we've seen. So she really changed the nature of the Democratic, the typical Democratic presidential campaign.
I also wanted to ask about women who have voted for Donald Trump. I think it's clear that he has gotten a significant number of women votes. How much can you sympathize with American women who decided that Trump would be the better president?
Well, I think there were, Trump appeals to, obviously, he was able to get the Republican base to come home. And of course, we do find women in both parties, although women, there is a gender gap with women preferring the Democratic Party over the Republican Party. And that is probably going to be shown to be true in this election. He's courted economic anxiety and racial anxiety, anti-immigrant sentiment. And so for a variety of reasons, I think he's appealed to women and men. You know, we've seen big differences in the kinds of women that appeal to Trump versus Clinton. So, for example, we're seeing women of color strongly for Clinton. We're seeing college-educated women more for Clinton, more less educated and lower-class men and women more for Trump. So there's certainly differences among women that we have to take into account.
Well, thank you very much to Kira Sanbanmatsu for speaking to International Edition.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Trump's victory has sent a bit of a chill through the UN climate talks taking place this week in Morocco. That summit aims to add policy details to last year's landmark Paris Climate Accord. Henry Ridgewell looks at the potential impact of a Trump presidency on those efforts to combat climate change.
The Paris Climate Agreement seeks to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, largely through reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. More than 100 countries have ratified the deal in just 1 year, including the United States and China. Remarkable progress, says Professor Samuel Fankhauser of the London School of Economics Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change.
One of the reasons why we have the momentum that we currently see, why we have Paris and the fast ratification of Paris, has been US leadership.
US President-elect Donald Trump once described climate change on Twitter as a hoax concocted by China to undermine the competitiveness of US industry. On the campaign trail, he vowed to tear up the Paris deal within 100 days of office and refocus on US energy independence.
We're going to put the miners back to work. We're going to put the miners back to work. We're going to get those mines open.
A U-turn by Washington could undermine the global efforts to reduce emissions, says Fankhauser.
Taking that leadership role away would create a vacuum. That's no question about that. The good news, if there is good news, is that once the Paris Agreement is in force, as it now is, and the US is a member of it, leaving it is quite a lot more difficult than never joining it.
Delegates gathering at UN climate talks in Morocco fear their progress could be undone. Wera Manasseh Chilanga is from the Malawian delegation.
If he withdraws, it means everything is going backwards and it will not be good for the world.
Observers say the full impact of the Trump victory will not be known for several months, leaving an uncertain future for the landmark Paris Agreement. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Well, just ahead, children play Pac-Man using microbes. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers experimenting with mice say they have identified a human antibody that prevents a fetus from being infected with the Zika virus. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says there is a consensus that the mosquito-borne virus is a cause of microcephaly, which is a genetic malformation that leaves babies with smaller-than-normal heads. A number of institutions have been hard at work trying to develop vaccines to avert infection and some kind of treatment that might prevent the development of microcephaly in the unborn. 29 Zika antibodies taken from people who had recovered from virus infection were examined. Of those checked, the researchers found that one called ZIKV-117 was effective in neutralizing 5 Zika strains. They also say the same antibody they found can protect adult mice from getting the Zika virus. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. In the iconic video game Pac-Man, a pie-shaped character travels around a maze eating dots. In a new version, Pac-Man is chasing single-cell microbes thinner than a human hair. As we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, the new game's creators see it as a fun way to teach kids about microbiology.
This is Pac-Man like you've never seen or played before. Using a newly developed interactive microscope, the user can control the direction a microbe swims. Scientists at Stanford University designed the device called the Ludoscope. You can build one yourself using computer software and 3D printing.
There's a cell phone attached to it, so you can do many things through the cell phone interface. And the other, which I think is the most important part, is that you have a number of LEDs additionally on there that you control with a joystick. And thereby you can actually influence the behavior of the cells you see.
The organisms swim on a microscope slide surrounded by the LED lights, which respond to the light. Each cell can be manipulated by the joystick, which also controls the lights. A little light attracts microbes, while too much light repels them. In this version of Pac-Man, the player must guide the microbes through a maze, or steer them in between posts to score a goal. Besides being fun, the game is also educational.
You can select the cell, track it, you can collect data about it that you can then analyze and discuss. You can really do simple research in educational settings.
The scientists plan to partner with an educational game firm to develop the microscope into a science kit, allowing kids of all ages to play in the world of microbiology. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Now for some world music on International Edition. The southern African nation of Namibia is not so well known internationally for its music scene, but that may be changing. At this year's World Music Expo in Spain, VOA caught up with a young Namibian-born musicologist who is blending the old and the new. Bram Postumus has that story from Santiago de Compostela.
This is a track from the only compilation of music from Namibia that is commercially available in Europe. Called A Handful of Namibians, it was released in 2004. Since then, nothing. But here's a young woman who is changing all that.
Hello everyone, my name is Shishani. I'm from Namibia and from the Netherlands and from Belgium. I'm a songwriter, I'm a musicologist. I've researched different styles of music and the development of music history in Namibia.
Namibia is a crossroads. South Africa, Zimbabwe, Angola, Germany, all run through its turbulent national story and its music. Recording the original sound and converting it into something new is what Shisani does. She was born of mixed parentage in the Namibian capital Windhoek. At the age of 5, she moved to the Netherlands and later started her musicology study.
Growing up in Europe, there was no access to Namibian music. In 20 years, I only found one CD from Namibia, which was an ethnographic recording of the Bushmen people, the San people. Soul music, jazz, R&B, funk, hip-hop, that was the stuff that was accessible to me growing up as a child in Europe. There were no African artists on MTV or TMF when I was watching TV.
All these influences are now coming together in a new band, Shisani and the Namibian Tales.
Mm-hmm.
featuring herself on voice and guitar, a German player of the Zimbabwean lira, a Hungarian cello player, and a Turkish-Dutch percussionist, the band has been exploring and expanding the traditional sounds from Namibia.
We're going to do a collaboration with the San people in the Kalahari with the idea of collaborating, creating new music and performances, and hopefully touring together as well.
This approach, Shisani thinks, can be replicated across the continent, where traditions are old but have never been static. And now she's taking her musical hybrid around the world.
We have played in various European countries so far. We're visiting Pakistan as well in December. So we are fortunate and very happy and excited to be traveling so much and to be, you know, promoting Namibia and its cultures in other places of the world.
Shisani and the Namibian Tales have just released a new album. It's called Itala, and they are already confirmed for various concerts in the Netherlands in 2017. Bram Posthumus for VOA News, Santiago de Compostela, Spain.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. You can find us on voanews.com by clicking on the Programs tab at the top of the page, then scrolling down and clicking on the link to the International Edition program page. I'd like to give my thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, as well as the engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Thanks for joining us. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Michael_Lippin, and I'd love to hear from you. Have a good week.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From time to time, the United States identifies certain individuals and entities as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. These include persons who have committed or are deemed to pose a significant risk of committing acts of terrorism, persons who have provided support or services to designated terrorists or in support of acts of terrorism, and persons who are owned or controlled by or act for or on behalf of designated terrorists. When such an individual or entity is identified, the U.S. government places that person's name on the list of specially designated nationals and blocked persons, the SDN list. Assets within U.S. reach in which the designated person has an interest are immediately frozen, and the designated person is locked out of the U.S. financial network. U.S. persons are generally prohibited from conducting business with a designated person. In this way, the United States disrupts financial support networks for terrorists and terrorist organizations. In a push to disrupt the operations, fundraising, and support networks of the terrorist group Hezbollah, on October 20th, the U.S. Department of the Treasury designated Mohammed al-Mukhtar Khalis, Hassan Jamal al-Din, Yosef Ayad, and Mohammed Galeb Hamdar. Also designated was Global Cleaners S.A.R.L., a business owned and managed by Adhem Hussein Tabaja. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia also designated Khalis, Jamal al-Din, and Global Cleaners S.A.R.L. Tabaja and portions of his business network were sanctioned by the Treasury Department last year. While employed by the Al-Inma Engineering and Contracting LLC, a Treasury Department-designated company owned by Adhem Hussein Tabaja, both Mohammed al-Mukhtar Khalis and Hassan Jamal al-Din provided financial services to Hezbollah. Yosef Ayad is an operative for Hezbollah's external security organization, which is responsible for planning, coordinating, and executing Hezbollah's terrorist attacks worldwide. Mohammed Galeb Hamdar is another external security organization member who was also designated for acting on and behalf of Hezbollah by assisting in the planning of and supporting acts of terrorism. 2 years ago, he was arrested in Lima, Peru, on suspicion of planning terrorist attacks there. Today's joint action with Saudi Arabia underscores the strength of U.S. and Saudi cooperation in disrupting Hezbollah's worldwide commercial and financial infrastructure, said Adam Zubin, acting Treasury Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. Hezbollah continues to plan, coordinate, and execute terrorist attacks around the world, and Treasury will continue to aggressively target Hezbollah and those supporting its terrorist activities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa.